This audio recording is protected under U.S. copyright laws. It is produced by Nichols Patrick CPE and provided by your state society of CPAs for your personal non-commercial use. Further reproduction, distribution, or commercial use of this recording without written permission from Nichols Patrick is prohibited. Request for permission to reproduce this material should be addressed to Nichols Patrick CPE, Suite A, 973 West Liberty Street, Hubbard, Ohio, 44425. Welcome to the weekly tax update for August 26th, 2013. Five items this week, beginning with the IRS's announcement and the launching of an Affordable Care Act website to provide information for individuals and businesses about the tax provisions of the Affordable Care Act that apply to them now. Next, an internal legal memorandum in which the IRS comes to the conclusion that a Form 1120S S Corporation return, which is filed after the Form 1040 of its shareholder is filed, is not a disclosure for purposes of limiting the statute of limitations to 3 years. Instead, the individual who filed a return omitting some S Corporation income is now facing a 6-year statute because the income reported on the 1120S filed after he filed his Form 1040 was not considered to be a disclosure. And in another of a series of recent developments on the qualified domestic production deduction, a field attorney advisory concludes that a pharmacy care provider's photo processing activities constituted manufacturing, production, growth, or extraction, but putting a customer's photo or movie files onto photo CDs did not. Next, an extended item, this from Tax Notes Today, two articles by Richard Dees, one published on August the 13th, the other on August 20th, each running about 27 pages with footnotes, discussing a broad range of issues related to the new 3.8% Medicare tax and its application to trusts and family businesses. Finally, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals has backed the Circuit Court in holding that Wells Fargo Corporation did not engage in a transaction that had economic substance when it attempted to engineer a capital loss using what amounts to a classic contingent liability shelter. So it's a short list, but it'll probably take us a while to talk about all these items, so let's get started. First, at www.irs.gov/ACA, the IRS's website to educate individuals and businesses on how the health care law may affect them can be found. The website contains separate sections for individuals and families, employers, and other entities such as insurers and tax-exempt and government organizations. Included in the site are summaries of provisions of the law that have already gone into effect and those that will go into effect over the next few years. For example, the section for individuals has a link to a page that explains the 9/10% additional Medicare tax that went into effect January 1, 2013 for upper income earners, and it advises those who are eligible for the premium tax credit that they may choose to claim the credit in advance and have it sent to their insurer. This sounds like another opportunity for all the fraudsters to generate bogus claims now that the earned income tax credit rules have been tightened. We'll have folks claiming insurance tax credit or insurance premium credits that are not entitled to them. That'll be next. Okay, next, an internal legal memorandum sent to an agent in the field who's auditing a tax return. And the question is, does the individual's tax return qualify for the 3-year statute of limitations, or because there is unreported income, is it subject to the 6-year statute? In this memorandum, the IRS concludes that an S Corporation tax return showing underreported income and was referenced in an individual's Form 1040 return but was not filed until 3 years after the Form 1040 was filed, was not a disclosure for purposes of limiting the statute on the Form 1040. Information provided after an individual's return is filed is not considered to be disclosed on the return. Rather, constitutes omitted gross income, and that's an important concept here, gross income for the purposes of Section 6501E. Further, although reference to other documents or returns can serve as notice to the IRS, such a return must be in existence and in possession of the IRS. The IRS is not on notice of information in documents when those documents have not yet been filed. According to the Field Attorney Advisory, even if the IRS read the Form 1120-S as an addendum to the Form 1040, the late-filed Form 1120-S would be the true equivalent of an amended return, since it was filed after the original return and would alter representations made in the original. Gross income. There's that term again. It's going to bite us. Gross income can only be disclosed within the meaning of Code Section 6501E1B2 if the information necessary to place the IRS on notice of the nature and amount of gross income from the item is in possession of the IRS when the return is filed. Now, the additional danger here is that the rule extending the statute of limitations is a 25% of gross income rule, and the taxpayer must consider, and in this particular context, the taxpayer and the IRS have to consider the taxpayer's share of the gross income of the S corporation, not the net income that's reported to the taxpayer, but the taxpayer's share of the gross income, which makes this even more dangerous. As the IRS says in its conclusion, a shareholder's gross income includes the shareholder's pro rata share of S corporation gross income. Next, another Field Attorney Advisory, this one 2013-3302F, in which the IRS concludes that a pharmacy care provider's photo processing activities do in fact constitute manufacturing, production, growth, or extraction of qualifying production property for purposes of Internal Revenue Code Section 199. However, putting a customer's photo and movie files onto photo CDs and movie DVDs is a service and not production. The pharmacy care provider used its own equipment and raw materials to produce a different tangible product in form and function, finished photos or photo books, from the customer's electronic file. Thus, the IRS concludes that under Regulation Section 1.199-3E1, the photo processing and printing activities, other than the picture CDs and movie DVDs, do in fact qualify for the domestic production deduction. This follows a summary opinion last week in which the producers of gift baskets, they're major producers, 80,000 baskets a day, mind you, but the producers of gift baskets were determined to be producers and not repackagers. And it was a close call in which the court was driven to go to the dictionary for a definition of packaging and a definition of production and then to interpolate the two. Many of you know that I use, rely on, and recommend Tax Analysts, Tax Notes Today, and Federal Tax Library. On August the 13th, the first of two articles by Richard L. Dees was published in Tax Analysts, and the citations are in the citation list that accompanies this program, discussing how the new 3.8% Medicare tax applies to trusts. Part 2, published on August the 20th, includes not only some additional information on trusts, but also Mr. D's commentary and analysis regarding what I think of as some family business issues. Specifically, he addresses a comment in the preamble, which does not find its way into the proposed regulations, by the way, and here's the comment. The grouping rules will apply in determining the scope of a taxpayer's trade or business in order to determine whether such trade or business is a passive activity for purposes of Section 1411(c)(2)(a). However, a proper grouping under Regulation Section 1.469-4(d)(1), which is the section that allows taxpayers to group their rental activities with other trades or businesses if the rental activity is insignificant or if the rental activity is an integral part of a trade or business in which the taxpayer materially participates. The IRS goes on to say that will not convert gross income from rents into other gross income derived in a trade or business. This is would appear to be contrary to the plain reading of the statute. Mr. Dees goes on to comment, if this interpretation is sustained, the IRS will have opened the door to challenging proper groupings under Section 469 as improper groupings under Code Section 1411. If there are two sets of groupings, Mr. Dees complains, one written and one not, then chaos will reign. The final regulations should at least provide that a Section 469 grouping is in the aggregate a trade or business or not. I happen to believe that the or not is not a fair option. And Mr. Dees, in his article, goes on to say, the preamble and the proposed regulations simply ignore the statutory language and the legislative history of Code Section 469 and Code Section 1411, and instead construct proposed regulations out of the statutory title of the provision, which bears little resemblance to the statute. The next area of difficulty Mr. Dees calls to our attention is in the August 20th, Part 2 of his piece, question number 17, does the hospital insurance Medicare tax always apply to business income that escapes the net income tax? The hospital insurance tax applies to the K-1 income of an active business owner only when that business income is self-employment income. So the HI tax treatment is clearest for an S corporation, but less clear for limited liability company members. He goes on to discuss the application of the 3.8% Medicare tax in the context of the long-running dispute that many of us have had with the Internal Revenue Service over whether or not a limited liability company member's self-employment income can be limited to the amount of a guaranteed payment for services. You may have chosen not to press this issue, but I think now we have no choice on behalf of our limited liability company members to establish guaranteed payments as reasonable compensation for services rendered in an attempt to avoid both the self-employment tax and the Medicare tax. Before Section 1411 was enacted, Congress in fact considered closing what came to be referred to as the Edwards-Gingrich so-called S-corporation loophole, in which S-corporation shareholders, employees paid themselves minimal salaries and took big distributions. The bills that Congress considered would have subjected the K-1 income to the tax of an owner that was active in the business, but only when the business income was essentially all from personal services. The proposed fixes all exempted the income of other more capital-intensive S-corporation businesses from the hospital insurance tax. So the likelihood that Congress can or will act to impose self-employment tax on all S-corporation income appears to be slim and none. Congress has barred the IRS from issuing regulations that would redefine who is a limited partner for purposes of Code Section 1402A13. And so, for the time being at least, I believe we can take the position that for the limited liability company member who is active in the trade or business of the LLC and who receives a guaranteed payment for services, it is only the amount of that guaranteed payment which is subject to self-employment tax, and it is only the amount of that guaranteed payment that is subject to the 3.8% Medicare tax. Finally, this week, we have a decision of the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals in WFC Holdings Corp. This is Wells Fargo Corporation. What Wells Fargo did was transfer government securities and underwater leasehold interests to a controlled holding company in exchange for the company's stock and its assumption of lease obligations. This was a classic contingent liability tax reduction strategy sold to Wells Fargo by its then auditors, KPMG. I think it's fascinating that KPMG continues to be thought of as an auditor, and auditors are supposed to be highly ethical, when the record of their ethics in tax work is pretty spotty. Anyhow, in 2003, Wells Fargo claimed a capital loss carryback and asked the IRS for an $82.3 million tax refund, which the IRS refused to pay. This is a contingent liability shelter, even though it involved leases. It's no different from Black & Decker. It's no different from Coltec. Black & Decker was a contingent liability shelter involving medical, self-insured medical claims. Coltec was a contingent liability shelter involving warranty claims. Thankfully, the law has changed since these contingent liability shelters were put together, but it certainly should be a clear lesson for all of us that those things that really seem too good to be true are not true. That's a wrap for this week. Remember, stay safe.